Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy.
All right, welcome back to episode 25 of Something Wrong with the Podcast. It's your boy Julian. Before I go anywhere, call in at 877-557-SWWP to get in contact with me, your intrusive thought therapist. There are so many calls that I have to get up to and up to speed with, which we will. Maybe today I'll get to a call, but there's a lot happening, and I really want to get to Drake because he drops this single called What Did I Miss? And it's difficult to claim that you've missed something when you, in fact, haven't gone anywhere to begin with. This is my hypothesis when it comes to Drake. I truly believe Drake is addicted to being Drake, and I don't think he knows what it is to not be this character and what comes with being this character. It comes with being a number one chart-topping artist. It comes with, you know, the perceived love and adoration from millions of people internationally, domestically, everywhere he goes, everyone loves and has known Drake forever. He's seeing a new version of this character that he's created, and it isn't well received. It's not universally loved. And for the first time, he's had to fight against the public perception that has been casted upon him. So after Drake recorded Her Loss, he did explicitly say, look, I'm going to take away time away from music. I want to be with my family. I just, you know, I've been putting out so much content. I just need time to debrief. Totally respected. Put out a fucking classic album. That Her Loss album is incredible. And then what does Drake do in classic Drake matter? Follows up with another 6-track EP because he just can't stay away. So now we're looking at more Drake music. And then it's becoming this thing where we're slowly seeing that he can't commit to not being the character that he is. So on the ongoing summer, we see the Kendrick beef play out in real time. Not here to discuss how that bode, but that win or loss for Drake, that it doesn't matter. The point is it changed the perception of Drake to the public, to the media, and just to even casuals at large. So then what does Drake do? He has to change that perception because what happens when Drake gets into the booth, he's setting the sound of the summer. He's creating that next best sound. He's creating, you know, a song that's going to be number one until he creates the next number one. He's so used to having the expectation of whatever I put out is going to be the standard for this next, you know, few months. In this instance, for the first time in Drake's career, he's going in there having to dig himself out of a hole, having to dig himself out of a rut. And it's not that the music's bad. It's not like Drake's putting out bad music and he needs to get out of a creative funk. It's that he currently has been the latest artist with the stink. This is a conversation I was having with my buddy Jordan over from Complex over the weekend. We hung out quite a bit. We spent the 4th of July together. Shout out to Jordan. Great people. And I actually wanted him to have this conversation with me on this episode, which I hope to still have with him probably maybe next episode, pending our schedules. But we were having this conversation of artists that have been the misfortune of being artists that have the stink. And what does that mean? Let's define the stink. The stink is something that can be caused by many things. It can be caused by an embarrassing video of you going out, like Meek Mill when he's like always, you know, falling or going down, you know, stairs. It can be caused, it can be by your own doing. It can be like Chance the Rapper putting out his last album and then having to cancel his last tour. And the music is one thing, but the my wife thing is what stuck with it. And then that became, when you think of Chance, you always think of my wife, my wife, my wife. And then subsequently, the lack of success from that album amplifies the message that all he cares about is his wife, his wife, his wife. We've seen it with Lil Baby. Everyone, there's been a wave on the timeline of, you know, oh shit, another Lil Baby feature, oh, another like no one asked for this, all that stuff. We've seen it with him. We've seen it with Big Sean. The narrative with Big Sean, meaning like, you know, he's got outpaced by his peers of his time. He drops, you know, anytime it's like, what's the corniest bar in rap? You see the Big Sean photo pop up and it's like any lyric by this guy. So what sucks about the stink is more often than not, it's not something that the artist has inherently done to themselves. It's something that has been placed on the artist by the public perception, really by Black Twitter. And what Black Twitter can do is really just make or break your damn career. And I was having this conversation with Jordan, and we were trying to determine what artist has gotten themselves out of the stink. Who has successfully unstunk themselves? We discussed Roddy Ricch, Meteoric Rise. We're seeing, you know, The Box becoming a smash hit. That first album that he put out is just certified hit after hit after hit. And then we see, you know, the subsequent following songs aren't as great. But then we see the public perception turn on him. And now we're seeing the stink become the narrative, right? So what this pertains to Drake is Drake's stink isn't for lack of quality music. His stink is for the, you know, arguably the loss to Kendrick in the beef. So now people are judging him because it's like, now they're perceiving what Kendrick said to be true, that you're not from this culture, you're a guest in the culture, you're, you know, there's that narrative of everything Kendrick said about Drake being a PDF and all these things. Like, there's people are just living that now as what Drake is in their mind, which, of course, I'm not here to debate what's facts and what's not. That's not the point. The point is there's enough new narrative and negative narrative out there about Drake that it can just overshadow any music he's put out. So even leading up to What Did I Miss, he drops that 100 Gigs EP, the songs with like Young Thug, I believe it was Lotto, and 21 Savage. What else did he drop? I mean, what makes me laugh about Drake, he's operating on a level of tone deaf, which is like, it's comically, it's very amusing to me. So we saw the album with Part PND, you know, the audacity to put out an EP, an album, and he probably did about three other singles and a litany of features. Remember, he was doing the features with like the Gordo, and then he did that Camila Cabello because he was hooking up with her for a few months or so. So he tossed her a couple features. Like, the audacity of Drake to put out, you know, a very healthy amount of music, including an album and an EP, to come back and ask people, what did I miss? You didn't miss shit because you never went away. If Drake really took the time to go away and you know, bring it into the camp, figure out what his next move is, and roll this single out for the moment it could have been, then maybe I would feel differently about the song. I'm not a big fan of the song because I think, again, like I think it's incredibly tone deaf, down to the, you know, that this new moniker that he's calling himself the Iceman, which is, you know, there's all these, you could do the deep dive on the Marvel character that was, you know, this character that was closetedly gay and hooking up with men. And then also, like, there's the double entendre of, like, why would you go by ICE, knowing what ICE is doing to people here and deporting people here in the United States. I don't even want to go that far. It's just like, it all makes sense. It's just very much, it falls in line with who Drake is at the moment. But What Did I Miss, to me, falls extremely flat because really what I've learned through this is Kendrick has seemingly altered this man's pen for the foreseeable future. So let's go through, and what do I mean by that? Let's go through the lyrics here. I don't give a fuck if you love me. I don't give a fuck if you like me. Asking how did it feel. Can't say it didn't surprise me. Last time I looked to my right, you niggas were standing beside me. So that's the hook. Drake's entire personality now is how everybody in his life has betrayed him and he's lost his friends. It has severely altered the course of his penmanship following this beef, which is like, I don't need, selfishly, I'm speaking for personally, I don't want more songs from you talking about how more people betrayed you, about how over the last 2 years you learned who really wasn't riding with you, who really isn't, you know, your guy after you thought they were. Even like, you know, some of these guys you literally have tatted on your body and turns out that they weren't riding for you and they're not your family. So let's continue. Let's find some more lyrics here that kind of raise this point. It's love for my brothers and death to the traitor. Let's go. She decided to say no, but she says yes to me later. I mean, all right, questionable. Or ass and I like, I mean, to be honest, he's not saying much. I think it's less about the verse here because the verse is whatever. The beat's, it's a beat's okay. The beat's fine. But first of all, claiming what you missed when you've been here the whole time is really what bothers me the most. But it's just, you know, I love hanging around pussies who trying to try me. It's like he's just peacocking and like, you know, it's this whole effort to be like, I didn't lose. Everybody I know is just a hater. Like, I'm not the bad guy. Everybody I thought was great is just like, fuck you. I thought you were my brother. It's like he, the man is clearly hurt. And I don't think the fix for someone that is this hurt is to dig yourself out by publicly putting out more music to then be chastised and judged by. People currently, Drake, aren't like, unless they're your stand, which are in plentiful. I mean, the guy had the truck driving around Toronto, besides that one guy that called him a bitch, whatever. People are going to do that because people love the attention. You have a level of standmanship that is unlike any other. But where I do think that that has bled into is your camp and the people that you're creating these music with, or the people that, if you do at all, I don't know if you do this, the people that you turn to ask what your next move should be or how you should create your next sound or what, you know, how you should respond to certain things. Because quite frankly, every move you'd made since this beef, I think has been a pretty bad mistake and has just inherently increased Kendrick's standing, all things considered. And I know you're thinking, bro, the beef, none of this is about the beef. This is about, it's my solo career. I don't give a fuck about. But you don't have the luxury of pretending like that summer didn't happen, and you also don't have the luxury of pretending like every move you make isn't going to be looked at through the lens of that beef. I think the best thing Drake did after the beef is the record with PND, because it's all right here. I'm collaborating with my long-term, like my long-standing guy. He's been in my corner forever. We make great music. This music has nothing to do with the beef. Yeah, sure, I'm sure there were some subtle jabs or whatever, but it's very much a PND sound album, and Nokia came out of it. So not only did you make a great collaborative album with a good friend of yours and long-term partner, you made a fucking hit. You got the smash record that you've been waiting for. I don't know why Drake did this. This is what bothers me. It's like, if we're pushing the solo album, if this is the lead single, I'm nervous, because I feel like this album is going to just be, if this is the tone of it, if the tone of it is nothing you can say hurts me or nothing you say affects me and fuck all my brothers that were with me at one point and left me to the wayside, if that's the general gist of this album, then it's not the sound that I want from Drake. I was listening to Middle of the Ocean the other day, my personal favorite record off Her Loss, and it's just, Savage isn't even on it. It's just Drake. And it's just like, just some of the best penmanship that I've seen from Drake in a while. And then even on For All the Dogs, 8 a.m. in Charlotte is another one where it's just like, that's the level of bars, the level of writing, the level of just, I mean, that's that flow state where he's just operating on a different level. It's not angry music. It's not music that's supposed to, you know, target anybody. And I know that's just a matter of my opinion, but to say, what did I miss, could not be that's the worst thing you could say at this point in your career. When in fact, you've been here the entire time. You've probably been more present now than ever. You've been not only on the music side that I touched on earlier, but you've been doing streams with Aiden Ross. You were going to do a stream with Kai that just ended up getting canceled. Like, you've been seen, bro. Like, you didn't go anywhere. You've been here. I want to stay on music, but pivot to something far more serious than the Drake stuff. The artist Bobby Villain had a performance over at Glastonbury Festival. For those that don't know, it's the biggest festival in Europe. It spans over the course of 5 days. And I'm sure you've seen it on your timeline, but Bobby Villain went viral after getting the crowd to chant death, death to the IDF over and over and over again during the stage of Glastonbury. And during the course of that, multiple flags, Palestinian flags are waving in the crowd. And it was like a very interesting moment and like an important outward level of protest, certainly at that scale, especially in a country like the UK. And he has been getting, you know, I believe Trump said he's not welcome in the United States, and he's been getting public media backlash, obviously support from the creators and just people. He's getting support from the community, But when it comes to the media, he's become a villain, and they're vilifying him and revoking his ability to travel across the world and basically theoretically trying to kill his career, to no surprise. And it's stuff like this reminds me. In school, I focused a lot about how music has always mirrored the current culture and how they are far more similar than they are dissimilar. And even further, the through line of how the artist more often than not is speaking for it's funny, the artists that are the people that have the platform, the people that are successful in their own right, are often those that are most willing to speak for they're the voice of the voiceless, which is a song by Rage Against the Machine, which addresses these things as well. But this theme in Glastonbury was very prevalent, and I just kind of wanted to run through the history of these moments, and in particular, we could start at the Vietnam War when Bob Dylan, you know, has a song. He says, and this is kind of where the start of this whole thing is. He says, "Come, mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend a hand, for the times they are a changing." Meaning, like, the beliefs and the philosophies that our parents and their parents believed in, the newer generation isn't buying the lies. We're not buying the bullshit that we've been spoon-fed by, you know, big media, politicians, the extreme wave of Islamophobia and how certain people were painted across the course of history, obviously in the Vietnam era. Different grouping of people here, but even in that same era, Jimi Hendrix famously played, you know, a really eerie and dark rendition of Star Spangled Banner on his electric guitar in 1969 during Woodstock. That was a pivotal moment. And then even move forward in terms of history into the Cold War, into the 80s and 90s. And we've seen, you know, Bruce Springsteen protest, and U2 often spoke out and condemned, you know, the war crimes that were going on in that era. And then more when I was a kid, when I was a child, we would see during the Afghan and Iraq wars in the 2000s through 2010s, Green Day, their American Idiot tour was, you know, steeped in a lot of anti-Bush and anti-war rhetoric. And they really went out on the ledge in Rage Against the Machine, whom I mentioned earlier. In 2007, they performed at Coachella, and they gave like an extremely fiery, like, anti-war speech, which led into a performance of Bulls on Parade, which targeted the military-industrial complex. And now even in the present stance, you know, now we're up to today looking at protests for, you know, Syria, Ukraine, Gaza, and, you know, Sudan, and any anti-war genocide. Even Kendrick, you know, has spoken up. System of a Down has spoken up. A lot of people, a lot of artists are willing to take that chance. And it's just really difficult when we're seeing, because wars, the information we're getting from war, as much as Israel has done their best to control who is telling the stories from what's going on in Gaza. And by that, I mean, they're just not allowing journalists in. So it's a war-torn zone that they are purely controlling who is allowed in and out. And they're actively avoiding journalism to get in, because what do journalists seek to do? Tell the truth. And the truth of the matter is, it would really hurt their public perception more than they've already done unto themselves if they let in journalists to tell this truth of that story. So even, you know, last week when Bobby Villain is chanting at Glastonbury, that day, 72 Palestinians were killed. The day before that, another 72 Palestinians were killed. And the day before that, 48. The day before that, 62. And the day before that, I believe it was about to be 79, rumored or so, 79. And the reason why I did those 5 days is because Glastonbury spans 5 days. So we're looking at hundreds of deaths. And these aren't Hamas deaths. These aren't, you know, we're taking down the enemy. These are civilian Palestinian children, women, and people that are just trying to live any semblance of a normal life at this point. It's not even about living a life. It's purely a matter of just how to survive in an area where it seems like death is inevitable. And there's a outrage and concerted effort to take down this man in his career. There's more outrage towards him than there is for the hundreds of deaths that I just rattled off here. there are some videos and things coming out, and I haven't spoken on this in a while, but you're looking at aid pickup spots where people are, these are quote unquote safe zones, where people are going to pick up food and water just to survive. And you know how these are kind of set up with these fences, and it's kind of, you know, once you're in there, you're basically trapped. And now we're seeing videos of IDF soldiers just using that as target practice and just unloading and just shooting at people in these aid zones, people that are there to pick up a bag of rice to then run back to a home that no longer exists. And just, it's like they're just trying to get something to just survive, and they're getting shot in those zones. Now we're seeing that they are contaminating the food that's even being offered, the aid that is being shared with the Palestinian people is poisoned food, or food that has gone bad and food that'll make them sick. Basically just making sure to speed up the process, which has ultimately been rid that region of those people so they can then bulldoze it, pave over it, and just create and extend greater Israel. So, and that's what the Zionist, I mean, that's the calling of the Zionist, you know, belief system is that greater Israel. They even wear the patch, like on their military garb. It's not, you know, a photo that shows the current state of Israel. It's what greater Israel is to become, which includes, you know, all of Gaza, parts of actually Lebanon as well, and just expands across that region in a way in which they were never intended to. So it's just really sad. And it's not that far from even the energy and rhetoric we're seeing now here with Zoran Mamdani, who I did. He was at ranked number one in my poll for the mayoral Democratic nominee. And we'll see. I hope he has a chance in the general election, which I would think he does. But the powers would be, you just never know what can happen to somebody from here until then. But the outward Islamophobia and comfort with, you know, making fun of him or calling him a third world person for eating food with his hands, which is what an absurdity, coming off the heels of 4th of July, where we're watching Joey Chestnut and like 15, you know, overweight, you know, men stuffing burger buns and hot dogs into cups of water and shoveling it, guzzling it down their throats on national television. And we're calling Mamdani a savage and an animal. Like, there's just the lack of awareness. It's honestly, it's kind of similar to what I was critical about Drake for. It's like the ability to just chastise someone and throw stones at someone's culture. And if we just for a second look at what we do, and look at what we reward and the behavior that we celebrate within our own culture. It's really astonishing how little self-reflection and empathy people can have purely based off skin color and in an area in which they're born. God forbid it's foreign. If it's foreign, it means it's beneath me, because it's not, it's fear of the unknown. That's all it is. It's, you don't know those cultures, and because you don't know them, it can make you feel stupid and it can make you feel threatened. So then how do you communicate that when you don't know the words, when you lack the curiosity to get to know those people? You vilify them, you call them all types of different names, when it's crazy that the stigma of Black people, when slaves were first coming into this country and they were looked at as like second class citizens because they smelled and they were, you know, they were a gross species. They're just, they're subhuman beings. And a lot of the insults that the Americans, like the English, were saying about these slaves, in particular to the smell, is something that was said about them for hundreds of years. Like all they're doing is just moving. You're moving yourself up the ladder of the caste system. So it's like, okay, who's beneath me? Are these guys? Okay, they're the ones that are actually stinky. They're the ones that are poor. You're just relieving yourself of being the lowest person on the totem pole. It's a really sad way of living. You shouldn't go about life looking for the person whose back you can kick in to uplift yourself, because you're too afraid to actually work on yourself and address the very things that would make you a better person. And by doing so, would make you understand. And I'm not saying love thy neighbor. I'm not even going to that extent. But just don't vilify them and make them beneath you. How about just see them as equal? Why don't we start with equality? That just seems to be a fair fucking place to operate from. Hey, everybody, it's that time of the episode. Let's do a voicemail. It's been far too long. And like I said, I'm going to start digging into voicemails more. I really apologize. But if you would like to get in contact with me, please call us number 877-557-SWWP. I do want to say this before I actually play this. I went to Everyday People at Pier 17 over the weekend, and the amount of love and just people that wanted to, you know, talk or take a photo or just be like, hey, I appreciate what you're doing and I support you. And, you know, it's really great seeing you do your thing. It really puts everything into perspective and makes me super appreciative of all the people that take the time to listen to my content, consume my content, and have signed up for this journey with me. And I could not be more appreciative. And anytime I'm outside and things like that happen, it really makes me feel a lot better about taking this risk and going out there. Now, look, 25 weeks in, like, this is something that it was never easy to do. And the start of it, which you are all aware of, started on, you know, in a traumatic state. But thank you to everybody that I saw at Everyday People, and congrats to them. I mean, MoMA there and Milhouse killed it. Those are my good people. My buddy Elliot shoots photography over there. I didn't see him, but I know he was on the ground doing great work. So thank you again, guys. All right, let's play his voicemail.
Hey, what's up, Julian? I just had a quick question. So I went on vacation with my ex, probably a few years ago, and we went to a certain beach, and I would like to go back, and I want to take my current girlfriend, but I'm afraid that I shouldn't because I've already went with my ex here. I really want to go back to this beach. I enjoyed it. What are your thoughts on that? Should I take my current girlfriend to this beach? I know what everybody's thinking, probably not, but I don't know. I don't know. I feel like I should, but just not say anything that I haven't been there, but then I would be lying. So it's almost like I can't go. So in this predicament, I could never go back to this beach because unless I go with a group of guys, and that's probably not going to happen. So what you're telling me, even if I went with family, let's say I invited my family and I wanted, you know, my current girlfriend to go because I want them to enjoy this spot as well. Is that still a no-no, even if I make it a family vacation? I don't know. Is there a time limit? Is there a time frame on how long it's been since me and my ex had been there? Just let me know your thoughts. Let me know if it's okay, if there's a time limit. Is it okay if I bring family so that it's not, like, something special in that way? I don't know. I really want to go back to this beach, though. And, yeah, just let me know your thoughts. Appreciate it.
Bro, go to the beach. You're living on this, you're hinging this all on the dam. I've been here before. Like, as if your current girl's going to find an old pair of your ex's underwear in the hotel room in which you stay in. You also don't have to throw the scent off the trail and be like, let's do a guy's trip there or a family trip there. So by the time I do bring my girlfriend there, I can say I've been there before because, oh, my boys and I stayed in this place one time. You can go about this in a few ways. You choose the right journey for you, whatever makes you. It sounds like you're a good guy and you don't want to lie to your girl, which I would encourage you not to do. You also don't have a reason to lie to your girl. I don't know your current girlfriend, but I have a friend that has a routine. He's actually there right now. He has a habit of taking every new girl he dates to Italy. It's his move. He's very well off. He gets in this routine of, oh, you know, like, I like this girl. It's been about a month. We're going to go to Italy for a couple weeks. Because for him, that's just a part of the routine. But he doesn't go there and go, hey, you know, last time I was here with my ex, we went and got pizza at this spot. It's my favorite pizza in Italy. But I can't go back there because, you know, I had a slice there with my ex. The world isn't off limits because you have a shared experience with someone there. Even though if that person's no longer in your life, you can go with your current girlfriend to this beach. Bro, you're not just going to block out this beautiful place in the world because it reminds you of your ex. Don't go there and be on some weird shit and, like, sulk and get in, like, your sentimental, like, damn, we went snorkeling. We rode the banana boat. I rode the banana boat with my ex and LeBron and D-Wade. And now I can't do that with my current girl because it reminds me of her. Don't go there and be out on some weirdo behavior because she can sniff that out. You can say, hey, if you really want to be like a man and be honest as fuck, you could just be like, hey, in a previous relationship, I went to this spot and it's great. And I love it. I really love this place. And I really want to take you there and like have a trip together and start new memories there with you because this is just a special place for me. And, you know, it brought me a lot of joy and I know it'll bring us joy together. And I want to have a shared experience with you there and share, you know, something that I know is great. Like, I'm excited to have you see this place that I already know and love. You know, it doesn't have to, it's not about your ex. It's about the experiences you want to have with your current girlfriend. Or you can go about it probably like the more chill way. I mean, by more chill, I mean like a little on the deception meter. For if it's out of 10, we'll say about a 3 or 4. Just tell you that. Just say, hey, I found this beach. Looks great. Let's check it out. Who gives a fuck if you've already been there? Like, you could just say, like, nah, you know, I heard great things. I had a friend that went, or like, you know, a cousin went. Throw it on a fucking cousin that she doesn't know exists. Be like, yeah, they went. They had a great time. And I was telling them we were looking to go on a vacation. They recommended this beach. And like, hey, look, I found a great little resort. Literally the place you had already stayed at. So you can go in there and be familiar with the spot. But just say, like, the reason why I know so much about this place is because my cousin or my friend that went there told me so much about it. And I really wanted to get to know this place. So when we came down here together, we like had a great experience together. That's honestly not a bad play. I think it's absurd for you to plan a secondary trip with friends or family to throw the scent off the trail. So if your girl asks you, how do you know so much about this place? Like, what's the deal here? Feel like you've been here before. You can be like, well, yeah, no, my family, we did like a big family trip there. And then in the following week, now we're here together. It seems a little odd to go to the same beach twice in the same summer. But hey, who am I? I'm not going anywhere. I'd like to go to a beach. So I guess I shouldn't speak on your travel experiences. Yeah, I don't think you're I think because you're having these thoughts, you're a good guy. But I really think you're overlooking a situation that isn't that severe. You have a great relationship. You have a girl in your life. Take her to the beach that you know would be a good time, man. Have fun. Don't make it about your ex. Don't, like, I don't know if this is something that she, or how that last relationship ended or how much she even knows about that situation. Sometimes shit's not even worth bringing up. But if you do want to bring it up because for some reason the ex is someone that's like comes up a lot in your life, then you should be like, hey, I went there with her once. But, you know, whatever. It's over. That relationship is over. You can't, if she said my boyfriend brought me to, if you're on a date and you go to a bar, she's like, oh, my ex brought me here once. What are you going to do? Fucking like throw the drink at her? Like, you live in a city. You're going to go to places you've been with your ex. And as is she with probably an ex of hers. Like, the world doesn't close just because that relationship closes too. You know, go about your vacation. Have a damn good time. Fucking take some photos. Make some new memories. Make that vacation spot your spot with your current girl. And then you know what? If it doesn't work out, guess what? Next summer, new chick, bring her there. Because guess who's a pro? Third time, bro. You know the hotel staff. You drop in, you know, pesos or wherever the hell you're going to the waiting staff. The restaurant knows you. Oh, do you want the regular? And your girl's gonna be like, how the hell do you know? He's like, I bring all my hoes here. So you could play that. You could be that guy. You could be the fucking, you could pimp it out. Choose your own journey, bro. But good luck. Have a great time. Enjoy the beach. All right, everybody, that's all I got for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's episode 25 of Something Wrong with the Podcast. I will see you all next week. Peace. Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy.